The time has just passed 5 o'clock, so that means welcome along to the Drew Buzney Show on WRUC 89.7. On the show today, we talk the Patriots' first big mistake under Jerod Mayo and Elliot Wolf, Celtics' keys to Banner 18, and how the Red Sox struggles continue. All that next on the Drew Buzney Show. Welcome back to a rainy and overcast day from Union College in Schenectady, New York. As always, my name is Drew Buzney, broadcasting live on WRUC 89.7, the first station in the nation, and on all your major podcast platforms shortly after the show is done. So, without further ado, let's get to the headlines. And in Patriots news, Jerod Mayo and Elliot Wolf have made their first big move, transition tagging Kyle Duggar. What does that mean? That means that they have the right to match any offers the other NFL teams make towards Kyle Duggar, and Duggar will therefore earn $13.8 million for this tag in 2024, and him and the Patriots have until July 17th to work out a long-term deal. Now, because of this and the new rules that state teams can only franchise tag or transition tag players, one player per year, that means Michael Owenu will not get the franchise tag. And as I said, this was Jerod Mayo and Elliot Wolf's first big move, but it also was their first big mistake. Because when you look at Kyle Duggar and his play as of late, all I see is laziness. Laziness running down the field after opposing players. Lazy tackles that result in missed tackles and first downs, and overall lack of effort on his part. And then when you go more broadly and you look at the team's problems as a whole, where the problems originate from the offensive side, not the defensive side. The defensive side has been the helper. It has kept this team together and in games when the offense can't perform. So you look at the two players that you could have tagged, Michael Owenu and Kyle Duggar. And why are you not tagging Michael Owenu? Because to me, it's obvious. The whole offseason should be focused on improving the offense. The defense can be as is. Kyle Duggar, to me, is not a necessity to have on the roster. And I wouldn't pay him $13.8 million. I think he's worth $5 at max. I am not a believer in him. And so when I heard these news, I was a little dumbfounded because the offensive line was terrible last year. Absolutely abysmal. And if they're not going to re-sign Michael Owenu, if they're not going to get him, you wasted him. Because if we're not going to be willing to put up some money and be competitive with other teams and we lose him all because we chose Kyle Duggar over him and didn't franchise Michael Owenu, it's a bad mistake. One that Jerod Mayo can't really afford in his first year because all eyes are on him. I mean, taking after Bill Belichick, it's big shoes to fill. Big shoes to fill. So every mistake he has is going to be looked at with a huge magnifying glass. Staying with football and the Patriots, it came out at the Combine that their plan right now is to take a quarterback at the third overall pick and then sign a veteran quarterback. Names thrown around such as Joe Flacco, Baker Mayfield, and Jacoby Brissett. And that quarterback they draft will sit for a year and then they will play. And while I like to sit here and be negative about the Patriots and a lot of other teams, I can't say I'm angry with this move because you look at quarterbacks and they rarely ever strive and thrive and do good their first game in. You saw Bryce Young do it. Sorry, you saw Bryce Young not do it. You saw CJ Stroud do it with the Texans, and he was one of the few because you see Mac Jones, Bryce Young, and then you see Trey Lance and Jordan Love who didn't get their starts right away, and aside from Jordan Love, all struggled. Jordan Love waited multiple years by Aaron Rodgers, and he didn't do terrible. He didn't do amazing, but it was good enough. And it's a decision that I could stand behind, and I'm willing to suffer through one more year just to get better quarterback play the next. But staying with these rookie quarterbacks and the combine, we have to talk about Caleb Williams, who I think is probably the most selfish and not humble player ever. Because to me, he has proven nothing. Yes, he's won the Heisman, but Bryce Young has won the Heisman, and he's not doing well in the NFL. So aside from the Heisman, Caleb Williams has not made it to the college football playoffs, not had an undefeated season, not consistently beat ranked opponents. So he sits here because he's made tens of millions of dollars in nil, and he has all this hype around him and thinks he can say and do what he wants, and he has all the power, which I think is pretty absurd and stupid. And I would not draft him because you're going to go in and you're going to draft him. He's going to come into the locker room and think he's the best person in the world, and it's going to be terrible for the team dynamic. He got up on that podium in Indy and lowered his draft stock, in my opinion. So did Jaden Daniels and Drake May by not participating. They didn't show off their skills, and other quarterbacks, especially J.J. McCarthy, definitely almost leaped them. And talks right now are that J.J. McCarthy wasn't even going to be taken in the first round because he participated in the combine. Now could be taken over what we thought was going to be the third overall pick, Jaden Daniels. He could be taken early on. The Patriots may even end up with him, which is a little absurd, but it's possible now. And so you look at these new dynamics of these quarterbacks who think they have locked their spot in the draft. And they think that they have nothing to prove anymore, that their play in college football is spoken for everything. And it's not the case, because when you had the chance in a level playing field to go out against the other prospects, you weren't willing to do that. You were scared. And I find that stupid. And I wouldn't take a player that does that. So right now I'm leaning towards J.J. McCarthy because he was willing to put himself out there. He was a national champion. Something that Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and Caleb Williams cannot say or not even get close to. And he put himself out there. He had a great draft stock. He just won. And he could have bombed the combine, but he didn't. I mean, he made a couple bad throws, but he put himself out there. And that's the player I want to see that's not scared. With that is my 2 cents on football. And as we transition towards basketball, let's talk about the Celtics. After blowing out the Golden State Warriors 140-88 on Sunday afternoon, we are now all but certain they have what it takes to get to the playoffs. But getting to the playoffs is not the goal. It's winning Banner 18. And how are they going to do that? When I thought about that question, I think it's one simple answer. It's handling the pressure and accepting the pressure, because they're the best team, so teams are going to get up for that game. When they play the Celtics, no matter what's happening, they're playing 3,000%. It's not 110%, it's 3,000% of their effort. So it's when the three-point shots aren't falling, it's when the crowd is loud, it's when there's turnovers, is taking a deep breath and just getting back into the way you've been playing for the first three quarters of the season. And especially in the playoffs, I mean, you're playing the same team, you're trying to beat them four times. So it's a 7-game series. It could be 7 games. And it's handling the pressure, being smart, playing the way you play, not becoming selfish or playing one-on-one ball. It's continuing this team ball that is going so well. Because you look at the chemistry on this team and it's unbelievable. It's the definition of team ball. It's no more Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown switching off 1v1s. It's cohesive unit playing amazing basketball. And with that, whenever the Celtics win, the media does not give them anything. Just yesterday, Felger and Mass saying, "It didn't tell me anything. They just hit a bunch of threes in the first quarter. I'd be killing them if they lost, and I'm not going to give them credit for the win." Bob Myers, after some of these games, saying, "Oh, the Celtics should still be worried about the Bucks and the West and everything." Kendrick Perkins, their own Celtics player who used to work for NBC Sports Boston, not even giving them any confidence or saying anything good about them. Totally unbelievable. Whenever the Celtics lose, the media blows it out of proportion. And when they win, they can't even get any recognition. That is not happening for any other teams. When the Knicks lose and the Knicks win, it's the same reaction. No one really cares. But when the Celtics lose, it's the end of the world. And when they win, it's just an ordinary day and nothing happened. Totally absurd. Totally crazy. So I'm going to sit here and I'm going to do what the other media people don't do. The Celtics are playing absolutely amazing basketball. They won that game because of the way they play. They didn't just win that game because they hit threes. They won that game because they got open threes because of team basketball, because they got offensive and defensive rebounds, because they cut back door for easy alley-oops and dunks, because they played as a team and trusted each other. That's why they won. It wasn't because what Felger and Mass said, they just hit a bunch of threes in the first quarter. Yes, they did, but that all stemmed from the great basketball they've been playing. So from now on, I'm going to sit up here and I'm going to be the difference. I'm going to be the opposite of whatever media personality is out there who overreacts about the Celtics and won't give them the light of day that they are actually a good team. So while I may be negative about every other team that Boston has, no more for the Celtics. I pledge to be nice for the Celtics because Felger, Mass, Bob Myers, Kendrick Perkins, no one wants to say they're good. So I will. I will do that for them. Even though they don't need my validation, they deserve it. They've earned it so far. And they will earn more as they keep winning and keep making it deeper into the playoffs. So as we reach our last segment before our sports stories, we got to the Red Sox, who it was just announced that Lucas Giolito is out for the 2024 season with a torn UCL. Another blow to the already terrible Red Sox, who seem to be winning spring training games, but don't let that fool you. They will end dead last in the regular season. And it all comes back to the Fenway Sports Group, who decided to play Lucas Giolito 2 years, $44 million, and did not pay Nathan Eovaldi. That the Rangers actually paid Eovaldi $38 million for 2 years, and we paid $6 million for a pitcher who's not going to pitch, which is a little absurd. I mean, it's just another mistake that they're making. We could have had an amazing pitcher in Nathan Eovaldi, and yet we choose not to re-sign him, and then a year later we sign Lucas Giolito for $6 million more, and he's not even going to pitch. So you sit back and you say, at first, it was them not spending money, and now it's them spending money with mistakes. So when are they going to get it right? When are they going to spend money the right way? When are they going to make the right choice to get their team in the best position possible? With that, we head into our final segment of the day, our sports stories. It's next. And welcome back to today's sports story. Today's story is about the City College of New York's point-shaving scandal. It occurred in the 1950-51 season and involved seven American schools, such as NYU, Long Island University, Manhattan College, Bradley University in Illinois, the University of Kentucky, and the University of Toledo. It involved 33 players in all, as well as some organized crime members. However, most key players were on the CCNY Beavers men's basketball team. The cheating began with the National Collegiate Athletic Association, or the NCAA, and the National Invitation Tournament, the NIT champion, City College of New York, or the CCNY. Now, this roster, it featured an All-American and African-American roster, and it drew more fans at MSG than the New York Knicks. The scandal first became public when seven men were arrested and conspiring to fix games on February 18th, 1951. Among those taken into custody were All-American forward Ed Warner, center Ed Roman, and guard Al Roth. These were the three stars of CCNY's five that won both the NIT and NCAA tournaments. They are still the only such double championship in history, and destined to remain such since teams are no longer to play in both. You either play in March Madness or the NIT. The police caught them by setting up an undercover operation. Their arrests were made in Penn Station when their players returned from Pennsylvania after they defeated Temple University 95-71. Now, they found out because Julius Kellogg, he was a standout 6'8" Manhattan College center. He was offered $1,000, now that's $12,800 today, a bribe to shave points against a game against DePaul. While he was working for minimum wage, which was 75 cents per hour back then, at a frozen custard shop, Kellogg refused to take the money and reported it to his coach, Ken Norton. Norton then sent them to the New York City District Attorney Frank Hogan, and he obtained evidence about the corruption. Then Kellogg wore a wire, and when he was again approached in a nearby bar. In all, 32 players from 7 colleges admitted to taking bribes between 1947 and 1950, fixing 86 games in 17 states. The scandal had long-lasting effects for some of the individuals involved, as well as college basketball itself. Long after the scandal was over, coaches would warn their players what could happen to their lives if they chose to make some quote-unquote fast money. Following the discovery of several other irregularities, CCNY de-emphasized its athletic program and dropped down to what is now D3. CCNY was eventually banned from playing at MSG, although the assistant coach, Nat Holman, and head coach, Albert Letichke, were cleared of any wrongdoing. Thank you so much for listening this week. Next week is our last show for the term, so tune in then, and I'll see you all next week. Thank you very much.